This episode is brought to you by Carbonite, the leader in online backup. Backup your PC or Mac off-site, securely and automatically. For a free trial offer plus 2 free months with purchase, go to carbonite.com. Offer code TWIM.
This week on the show, Netflix rules, Hulu's kind of confused, and school's in on TWIM, where you can get the cow for free every week. All this on episode 181. Hey there, boys and girls. We are back with another edition of This Week in Media, and I am your hostess, Daisy Whitney. I'll just use the term host because hostess could be reverse sexist or something. Anyway, I haven't been here in a couple weeks, and hopefully you haven't missed me because we have so many amazing people on this show who fill in and help each other out. Alex has been leading this ship for the last few weeks at NAB, and then last week you had both Alex and Tim Street on. And Alex is, I think he's on his way to Africa, so we probably won't be hearing much from him for the next few weeks, but we have a wonderful group of folks here today, and also just a wonderful group of guests and co-hosts lined up for the next few weeks as well. So I'm really excited to be here. And as always, I have Tim Street with me. He's back in LA Daisy. This week. Hello. You were here last week. Was that fun?
It was fun. That was my first time sitting in studio, and I loved it. It was great. I got a foot massage. It was wonderful.
They do that here. We haven't told you guys that yet, but that is one of the many perks of coming to the cottage is, yeah, you get foot massages. It's just bliss. Anyway, I've had the pleasure of seeing Tim at virtually every event I've been to in the last few weeks. He's everywhere. That's my husband and I started calling you that. We're like ubiquitous Tim, omnipresent Tim. Everywhere I turned, Tim was there, which I think is a great spot to be in because hopefully sponsors and advertisers and people spending money on you are finding you just as easily as I am at all the various conferences like NAB and ad tech. And we also have a returning co-host, Zach Louis. Zach, where are you today? Are you in Missouri?
I am, yes. We are rebuilding office/apartment, and I'm in the wake of that destruction.
Very nice. And what are you up to these days? You're doing Adagio, your Adagio tea show, and you're also doing a lot of your own projects as well, your own film projects.
Yeah. Adagio TV, teaching a film production course at the university, doing the film pilot. I'm shooting a music video for a band in San Fran called People Mover, and doing that very soon, and super cool guys to work with, Addison and all those dudes. So, I mean, it's a lot of cool fun stuff lately, yeah.
Excellent. And of course, I'm tend to be very bad with explaining what people do. Tim, of course, is a digital showrunner, has a number of web shows and digital shows. And for those of you who are new and don't know me, I'm the host of the New Media Minute and report for a lot of other publications, various and sundry things. And also, first time guest is Cameron Harris in San Francisco. Hey, Cameron, how are you?
I'm great, Daisy. How are you guys?
Excellent. Thank you for being here. Now, Cameron is the creator, founder of the Harwood Podcast Network, which he runs with his family. And you're a junior in high school?
That is correct.
he's like the most articulate teenager I've talked to. So, so yeah, unless you're watching live, you probably wouldn't be able to even tell that he's in high school. We've exchanged a number of emails. I've talked about Cameron's shows and Cameron's network on the New Media Minute. So it's really a pleasure to have you here. For those of you who are watching us live via Twit TV, I welcome you. It's good to be back. For those of you who will be listening later in the week, always a pleasure to share time with you. And important topics to touch on before we get started with the stories. And that is the issue of backing up your dad. You know, there's a saying that if it doesn't exist in three places, it doesn't exist. So I'm pleased to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Carbonite, the leader in online backup. A few things that you should know about Carbonite. It backs up your files automatically. So basically, whenever you're connected to the internet, your photos, your music, your emails, your financial records, office documents, you know, whatever it is, some file types are excluded, but by and large, pretty much everything you want to have backed up will be backed up automatically. It's really easy to use. You can use it to recover lost files. Because, you know, as my father-in-law says, there are only two types of people in the world, those who have lost data and those who are going to lose data. So if you're not using a data backup service, I urge you have to use it. You just have to back up your data in many, many places. I actually set my father up on Carbonite. So he has been using it for his PC. Now you can use it unlimited backup for PC or Mac. It's less than $5 a month or $55 a year. It's one flat rate. And basically, if you want to try it out, you can try it out for free. Go to carbonite.com, enter the code TWIM, T-W-I-M, and if you decide to buy the service after the trial, you'll get 2 months free with the offer code. So you have no excuse, and you don't want to be somebody who loses data, so definitely try Carbonite. Carbonite.com, offer code TWIM. Up first, more on the Adobe, Apple, Google little triangle. It's always good to have a love triangle, right? In the media, I don't even know what kind of triangle this is, but it might be
a love triangle, might be a hate triangle.
So as everybody knows, you know, Adobe has this ongoing spat with Apple. Really, Apple has the spat with Adobe, whether Adobe technology can run on the iPhone. And Adobe's been trying to do all sorts of workarounds to make the technology work on the iPhone, to do different versions and so on. And, you know, just Apple has not been happy with any of it. So finally, Adobe is saying, as I understand it, okay, we can't try anymore. We've done all we can. Couples counseling is over, and it's time for a divorce. And we found this new hot suitor in Google. And they're going to be focusing on Android phones. Tim, what do you make of this?
You know, it kind of reminds me of high school, where like there's a kid who wants to go out with the prom queen, and the prom queen wants nothing to do with him. So he starts stalking her, and then eventually he finds some other woman that he says he's going to go out with because she's not available. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And that is indeed exactly what's going on. And I guess one of the questions is, and Zach, I'll throw this one to you, is how much potential is there by focusing on Android phones? I have an Android. Yeah, it's fine as phones go, but it's, you know, it doesn't have the iPhone ubiquity, right, or cachet, well, or anything like that.
The iPhone obviously has the market share, as well as the iPad is now steadily climbing and it uses the same tech. I think that it's a troubling situation. I'm not a fan of Flash, and I don't really care that there isn't Flash on my iPad. I don't really care that there isn't Flash on my iPhone. You know, it's I feel like we're just in a transitional period where things are moving to, you know, HTML5 or other tech, and we're just kind of waiting for the old weighty stuff to sort of get thinner, and we're moving on to the next step. So I think it's cool that the Droid is going to support Flash, but at the end of the day, I mean, cool. I think that Adobe's making a smart move, moving their tech to an existing structure that will support what they have. But yeah, like Tim said, it kind of feels like the prom queen is just, you know, doesn't want to have anything to do with them.
And what else can you do in that case? Now, Cameron, what are your thoughts on this? What kind of technology do you use? I mean, are you an iPhone person? Are you a Google person?
I am an Apple iPhone Mac guy. All the way. Although I am a big fan of what Google does, I've never actually used an Android phone, which is kind of weird. But I despise Flash with every bone in my body. I mean, we use it for our video players on our website, but only because there's really no other way to do it at this point. We use Blip TV for our site, and their players are in Flash. They are working on an HTML5 player, and once they switch over to that, we will switch over to that instantly. I do think it's kind of weird that Adobe and Google are starting to get this kind of, you know, partnership going, because Google has said that they are moving towards HTML5, whereas Adobe is all Flash.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that exactly. You're right. I mean, that's sort of what's curious, is that we're seeing this shift, and now it might portend sort of a deeper partnership between Adobe and Google, but what of that? You know, what will come of that, and sort of what's the significance of that? So Netflix continues to do extraordinarily well, and released its earnings last week, basically just kind of blew away all expectations. So I'm going to share some of those numbers so we have it all in perspective. The company added almost 1.7 million subscribers in the first quarter of this year, by far the biggest quarter the company has ever reported. I'm basically referencing, I'm getting this data from a video news story right now, and it's an 85% increase over the net subs that were added in the first quarter of 2009. That was 929,000. You know, this is coming from a lot of different things. I mean, a lot of it is because obviously the strength of the streaming offering, getting that out there in the marketplace, letting people know about it, the 28-day DVD deals, whether they're good or bad, from Warner, Universal, Fox, and HBO. They've all been in the news, just kind of increasing awareness of these options. Now, new subscribers are disproportionately choosing the $8.99 one DVD out plan, which is what I have. I think what a lot of, I mean, obviously a lot of people, a lot of new subscribers are getting that, but I think a lot of folks are switching to that as well because it does come with unlimited streaming. So I think what we're seeing is kind of that shift to the streaming business that Netflix has been talking about. And while these numbers are phenomenal, while this growth is phenomenal, we're even seeing growth in terms of the number of Netflix users who are using the streaming option, how long they're staying online, how long they're watching the streaming TV shows and movies. But my question, Tim, I have to wonder, can Netflix do no wrong?
Well, as long as they don't offend the studios in any way and they go along with the people who are providing the content, I think they're going to do fine. I mean, they are becoming the blockbuster of the internet. And it's you know, in some ways, it's sad to see Blockbuster, you know, lose their grip on delivering home entertainment the way that they had it. But, you know, Netflix has been at this long and hard, and they've really done their homework, and they've made strategic partnerships with, you know, whether it's Xbox or the Wii or what we always talk about here on the show, the Roku box. I mean, people love this service, and you know, Microsoft's Quicksilver, or is that, yeah, Quicksilver. Quicksilver. I'm going
You're
surfing.
Thinking of Quicksilver because Zach's on the show and he's so hip.
That's right.
Hey, what's up, y'all? I'm drinking iced tea.
Of course.
Yeah, that's great. But yeah, I mean, they've done their homework. They've done a really nice job.
What I worry about, though, is that when a company is sort of on top of the world, when everything is going extraordinarily well, that's when you have to just be so careful. That's when you have a big bullseye on your back. And Zach, to that point, I'm wondering, what roadblocks do you think Netflix might face? What hurdles are going to be in front of this company as it just kind of rockets down this path over the rest of the year?
I look at it this way, Daisy, sort of to what you said to Tim earlier, why, you know, at this point, how can Netflix do any wrong? This is what they're offering. I'm paying $9 a month for a mail order DVD subscription service that is very, very fast and very, very efficient. If you lose a DVD, they replace it. No questions asked. If it's damaged, they replace it. No questions asked. They're amazing at their customer service. Not only is their customer service great, but what they offer for that $9 a month I pay is astronomical. I have immediate access to a plethora of streaming titles down from movies to TV seasons. I mean, I can fire up my iPad and watch it while on campus. I can watch it on my computer. I can watch it on my Wii now. I can watch it on my Xbox 360. I mean, it's really limitless for $9 a month. That is a day of buying coffee or lattes or, I mean, it's just... and it is scary. You kind of put yourself in a situation like, what can they do at this point to mess what they have up? But I feel like as long as they keep giving the consumer exactly, and this is going to kind of over to our next story that we're covering, but if they keep giving the consumer what they want and they're constantly improving their setup, their streaming, they're now mail out Blu-rays, they're improving, they're getting more titles. And they just did a deal with Stars. So the titles instantly increased huge because Stars plays gotten huge on Netflix. But the subscriptions haven't rise. They're doing more without charging more. And I feel like as long as they have our best interest in mind, we're going to keep paying them money. Because at the end of the day, $9 a month coming from that many people for their digital infrastructure is a pretty damn good deal for them. And that's why they're raking in the cash.
I agree. Netflix is definitely a fantastic service. Who are its competitors? Cameron, I mean, who should Netflix be looking out for? Because, you know, again, when a company is this strong, that's part of what you have to do. I think when you're leading a company like Netflix, is just be keenly aware, you know, of who might just come up next and be there to fight for some of your business. So who do you think Netflix should be concerned about, Cameron?
Well, that's kind of an interesting thought, because in terms of movies, I really don't think of anyone else. And when it comes to like getting movies online, Netflix is really where I go to, and I don't really consider any other place at this point. And even TV shows, like, you know, I'm hooked on Lost right now, watching all the back episodes of Lost. I know I'm behind the times, but it's so awesome being able to just watch the, you know, the entire season, no commercials too. I mean, it's like, yes, you can get these kind of streaming content services from other places. Like when it comes to TV shows, you know, the networks themselves have players on their sites and they're free, but they're ad filled and they have commercials everywhere and they don't usually look as good as Netflix. So in terms of competitors, honestly, maybe iTunes. I know they're not technically in the streaming movie right. business, but they are getting some good deals with studios.
I've actually, if I may, talking to my buddy Addison right now, and I am, he's mentioning the Lala service. If that picks up and starts supporting video, everything being in the cloud, that could be a possible sort of hurdle for something like Netflix to attack, because essentially their stuff is on the cloud. But if we start having a service where everything is easily accessible, whether you're, you know, paying for it or reaching other means to find your content easily access, could be a dent in the market share. But the ease of access to something like Lala or Air Video is a little bit harder to find. For the normal people, and normal people, when I say normal in quotes, find Netflix really easy.
Well, I'm going to be the skeptic here and say that as much as I do enjoy the Netflix service, especially the streaming option, especially watching it through Roku, the content is so limited. I know there's 20,000 titles, but more often than not, the movie you want to see is not among those. So it's early days, and they're doing more deals for streaming, so I know we'll see more content, but we definitely need to get more stuff there.
For sure.
So speaking of more stuff and other changes and subscription services, so Hulu is going to try its hand at this sort of... you know, being kind of like Netflix, kind of like iTunes, kind of like trying to survive when business is really challenged. So there's been a lot of talk, and the LA Times has done a great job really tracking this story, that Hulu is going to begin testing a subscription service as soon as May 24th. And that under the proposal, that Hulu would continue to provide free episodes. You'd be able to see probably the five most recent episodes of shows like Glee or Lost or Saturday Night Live for free. But if you want to go back and see additional episodes, like if Cameron Ward would want to go back and see sort of the entire back catalog on Hulu, you would need to pay $9.95 a month to access that. And Tim, the first question is, you know, what effect... I think that this is probably going to happen. One, do you think this is going to happen? And two, what effect on viewing will there be from a subscription fee with Hulu?
Well, I'm really curious. Cameron, are you skipping school today?
It might seem that way, but actually, I am homeschooled. And one of the nice things is I actually take a lot of electives. So technically, this is part of my schoolwork.
All right.
Oh, nice. Getting class answer. Credit for TWIM.
It's a very nice. Progressive Look school, sir.
Oh, just yeah.
Like that. I like that.
Hey, so...
wait, does that mean we can give you homework at the end of the show?
Yeah. You can, but it also means that I have the choice of whether or not I want to do it.
Oh.
There you go. So I think from a viewing standpoint, Hulu's going to lose some customers that aren't going to want to pay that. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are used to getting things for free, and it's hard when you've been given it for free to take it away. However, I do think that if they make an app available on the iPad, on the iPhone and on the Droid, wherever else they can make an app available and offer their service where it hasn't been offered before at a price, then I think they're going to pick up new customers. And I think that's the way to go. That puts the genie back in the bottle. But it's always hard when you've been giving away something for free. What did Mom used to say?
Don't give away the... cow. Why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free? I got engaged when I was 23, okay? I didn't pay attention to that saying. I was already getting married, all right?
She's one of those writer types.
I got married young.
Those are 23, Daisy. There's a little bit of dating time there.
Was I 23 or 24? Oh, I think I was 24. I met my husband when I was 23. Zach, will you? You are a devoted Netflix user, as you just talked about. So, would you, since you're already paying $8.99 for Netflix, would you add on and pay $9.95 for Hulu?
Well, there's the thing. Netflix doesn't quite cover everything, and Hulu has a lot of the titles that Netflix doesn't. I often find myself going to Hulu, not very often, but when I do, I'm disappointed because there's not all the episodes that I want to watch, and I'm not on top of it enough to find the most five recent ones, and that's my fault. But if there's an option, they're not taking away the free service. They're keeping it how it is, but they're also adding the $9.95 to get the whole back catalog, so you can watch more than what the regular audience gets. So there's still going to be the free Hulu there for people that aren't into paying the extra $9.95. So I think that a number might scare people away initially, but once they kind of get over that hurdle, then I think that the 995 will coast all the a lot easier. And if they add iPad support, it's going to be awesome. Will I get it? I'm not sure. I don't think that I watch Hulu enough to justify $9.95, but if they do well and they have the whole back catalog of episodes, I think that if I was watching a particular show, I'd maybe sign up for a month or two, because it's really easy to stream, and you know, you can watch it on the television with Hulu Desktop, and the Boxy Box is coming soon. And so I think that, it's $9.95 at the end of the day, not that big of a deal.
Well, and the great thing is, you know, you really wouldn't have to see that many ads, because Hulu mostly has PSAs these days. But another question here is, this would kind of make it a hybrid service, basically. You could still watch, what I use Hulu for is really just, you know, like watching Glee or watching 30 Rock. So I wouldn't have to go back, because I'm kind of, largely keep up to date with those shows. But as Zach points out, you know, you would have it if you wanted to kind of get into a show for the first time. But Cameron, a question for you is that enough? I don't know that Hulu, that it's fair to say Hulu is a company that is challenged right now, but certainly everyone is under pressure to generate enough revenue from advertising. And I wonder if, as we see all of these other options, is this subscription plan going to be enough to kind of keep Hulu thriving in the new media landscape?
Yeah, that's kind of going to be a big question mark. I think one of the big things that's going to affect how many people will actually fork over that $9.95 is whether or not, when you pay for this Hulu Plus, do you still see those ads?
Yes, that's a good point.
Okay, now see, that's a big turnoff. It's like, I'm paying for it and you're selling advertising to me.
And, you know, I don't know if we know the answer to that, but I think you're right. That is something that I'm scanning through this story quickly to see if there's anything on that. I'm going to have to look into that. I don't know if we know the answer to that yet, but you're right. That is definitely going to be a sore spot for a lot of people, because once you start paying, you know, that's the benefit of, buying a show for $1.99 on iTunes. Boom. You zip through the whole thing.
Yeah, no ads or anything like that.
You do pay for cable, though, and you get ads on cable.
Curses!
Oh, zing. Tim Street.
I did think about that. Yes.
I mean, people are trained to think that way with the internet, but you pay for cable, you get commercials. Now, you do have HBO, you do have Showtime, you get no commercials there, but we've been doing it for years.
Hey, Tim, speaking of what we will pay for and what we won't pay for, you were at Ad Tech last week, and we both went to see Chris Anderson, who is the editor of Wired, also author of The Long Tail, give a keynote speech. And Tim just had a great quip afterwards. But I was wondering if you could kind of recap a little bit of what he was... Chris was really talking about how tablets... The name of his speech was how tablets will transform media. He's a big believer in tablets, a big believer in the potential of the iPad and other devices like that to transform the media business. Tim was able to catch more of it than I was, because I was kind of running around since I was involved in programming it. What was the gist of it?
The gist is, you're the hardest working woman on the circuit. I mean, from NAB to Ad Tech, you were just working. I can't believe how hard you work.
Well, you know, I gotta keep paying those bills.
Anyways, what was interesting about Chris is that I don't argue with anything that he says. I mean, he talks about how, you know, this is going to put the genie back in the bottle, and we're going to see people paying for premium content, and it will allow, you know, big companies... it will enable them to produce high quality content that people are willing to pay for. It just seemed weird coming from the guy who wrote the book Free. Talking about The Long Tail and talking about making things available for free and the economy of free, it just seemed like such a 180 from what he had talked about before that it really, you know, slapped me in the face.
Right, that it was basically everything was going from free to paid for and charge, and that was how the media business is going to survive. And look, you know, nothing wrong with charging for things. I mean, we all have to make a living, and if that's what companies have to do to make a living, and consumers have choices and everything. But yes, it was sort of an interesting shift for him. But isn't everyone shifting these days? I don't know if we have a lot of sports fans in our assembly of thought leaders on TWIM today. We often find that when we have sports-related stories, nobody here watches sports, but that's okay. We can still discuss it. Brian Stelter of the New York Times, who was on last week's show, reported last week as well, that the Sony PlayStation has now signed a deal to bring Major League Baseball's live streaming service to PlayStation 3 video consoles. And Major League Baseball has really done a terrific job among sports leagues, being forward-thinking, getting its games, getting its content available in as many new media places as possible, with the Roku deal, with offering just MLB TV online, and I think has really been an example. The deal with Boxy, of course, is another one to keep in mind. And I guess I wanted to use this story to kind of discuss, not necessarily this deal per se, but really, you know, Major League Baseball has been the most aggressive of the sports leagues in new media deals, with NHL probably second. You know, where will we be watching games in 5 years? I'm going to throw this one to Cameron.
Yeah, I'm in the group that is not watch sports. However, I will say that I have seen the that app, you know, the iPad app, the iPhone app that they've done. And honestly, I think that that is really where it's going to go. Tablet-based, you know, semi-mobile kind of things. I don't know about cell phones, just because the screens are so small. But tablet devices really seem to be where it's at. That seems to be like the perfect balance between like TV and desktop computer and completely mobile cell phone stuff. Things like the iPad or, you know, that HP Slate device that came out a while back.
And do you think people who watch sports on TV will start to migrate away from sports viewing on TV to watching it in new places, like a tablet, for instance, Cameron?
That is the question. I mean, you know, I know that, you know, for people like me, I really enjoy watching stuff on my iPod Touch. One of these grand days when I get an iPad, I will watch it on that. But then there are those people, you know, and I know several of these people who, you know, their pride and joy is, you know, getting the biggest TV that they can possibly fit in their living room to watch sports on. And, you know, saying, you know, okay, that's a nice TV. Try moving down to this, you know, 10-inch tablet. I'm not sure how that transition is going to go for those types of people.
Right. Now, Zach, all of these different places where sports is available can kind of, are increasingly available, can kind of help diffuse any criticism for folks who are thinking about cutting the cord or thinking of getting rid of cable service, because one of the rubs against that is that, you know, most of the places where you're going to be able to watch games and follow games will generally be on broadcast TV or on cable TV, and it's often hard to kind of get those online. What do you think about that? You know, as we see more deals like that, how does that viewing start to shift, Zach?
I'm a sports fan. I don't miss football games of the teams I like, you know, Packers, Vikings, blah, blah, blah. And I haven't had cable for years. I'm either going to a burger bar on Sunday or I stream it online. And I haven't watched, you know, cable TV of my own, especially sports, in forever. I think that Cameron hit it sort of on the head. Having the 10-inch tablet in your hand while watching sports, this is different. MLB Strike Zone on the iPad, where it does the analysis of the pitches and there's all these different statistics that you can play with while watching your television, brings up sort of a whole new layer of interactiveness. And if they, you know, bring it to the NFL, I know the NHL is sort of second behind MLB in its new media gatherings. I think that if it goes to different places like the NBA and the NFL and they raise interactivity, they're going to increase viewership because they're more people are talking about something, the more people are actually going to watch. I mean, just look at a Brett Favre game. I mean, like, they're the highest rated because people are chattering about what's going to happen here, what's going to happen there. And I just, I'm excited because I would like to have the option to maybe pay for or, you know, find an actual stream that's not, you know, bad or that it looks good or, you know, and is actually geared and engineered for that. And I think that we're a small amount of time away from it, but when it finally comes, sports fans can sort of connect with new media and new tech, and, you know, lots of cool things will come up from that, because in the sports world there's so many things you can do with fantasy teams and et cetera, and I could go on and on, but the interactivity is going to really raise and create new layers of entertainment that we probably haven't thought of being possible with sports, I think.
And it's such a great point that you bring up too, that it might not be trading one for the other or trading one viewing vehicle for the other, but that in fact it might all be, it might be additive. The folks might be watching TV and interacting via a mobile phone or an iPad at the same time through a lot of these new media deals. Final question on this topic, Tim, is it critical for sports leagues to do new media deals, or sports programming still kind of immune to the bigger threats that have plagued a lot of the traditional media business?
I don't think they're immune, but at the same time, it's another revenue stream. I mean, with attacking any new platform that develops, it gives them another way to monetize their brand. And with sports, you know, people have such a xenocentrism towards their team that they really want to engage with that content as soon as they possibly can, while it's live, while it's happening, and make it happen.
Exactly.
There Zach, you go. How's the book reading on the iPad?
I could go on and on and on. Tell me a little bit about it.
Tell me about iBooks on the. I know you got rid of your Kindle. What do you like about iBooks?
I sold my Kindle the day I bought the iPad. I tweeted it. I had a PayPal buyer in a few minutes. Nice. I sold it at a very good price. iBooks is great. I have bought no books. I took all of my existing PDFs on my computer. I converted them over to the format for the iPad called ePublication. You put in all the metadata and all the album artwork, just like you do an iTunes song. And I've got a bookshelf full of completely interactive books with variable font sizing, brightness control. I have this. I did a whole kind of breakdown of this on my blog. If you go to zachlouis.com/blog. And I was talking to Tim before the show started. I was a big iPad skeptic at first, but as far as, I mean, it's replaced my Kindle and it has done so much more. And you know, we would have to do a separate episode on what this device really means, I think. And that's coming from a objective non-fanboy perspective of me being against it and then using it and immediately buying it right after that. But the book's experience is great. And I know you, Miss Writer, are interested in that. And I have DM'd you about it, I think, the day I got it.
Yes, indeed, he did. He basically said, iBooks kills the Kindle. It's so much better.
I think that you should most definitely 100% buy an iPad, hands down, if you're a big reader. I've got all the Halo books. I've got all the Star Wars books. I've got a lot of stuff to catch up on. How do you
transfer books that you already own, for those who are considering making this transition, just kind of give us a quick overview of how you transfer books that you already own on the Kindle to the iPad, if you're able to do that.
Okay, well, first off, there's a Kindle for iMac or Kindle for iPad app that will transfer all of your existing Kindle purchases just fine. But if you want to do it without that, you can kind of be not really a hacker or whatever, but you can hook up your Kindle to your Mac. You can access it through the actual data directory in your Finder application, and you can just literally drag all those apps out and you can download. There's a dozen of them, just Google PDF to EPUB or something like that, an easy converter. You drag and drop, you convert them to the publication format that you want. You drag it into iTunes just like you do a song, and it syncs up to your iPad. I mean, it's really, really easy. And beyond that, there is a ton of really great books in the bookstore that are totally free. And I just love, like I said, I'm doing that film production class, and my students finish their script, and I put it, you know, the script on my iPad. So I could probably be better utilizing it using a PDF reader app, but I've got flipping through pages of a script of a TV pilot that they're doing, and I, you know, put my own album artwork on there and stuff. And not only for educational places like universities, but just people in general. I mean, I think that, like I said, I could go on and on. This really is the future. It really, really, really
now,
is.
Now, Tim, since you're on the trade show circuit about as much as I am, you probably noticed that iPads play a key role at trade shows now. It seems to be the way a lot of people are demonstrating, you know, whether it's somebody who has a booth or not, that's kind of the key way people are demonstrating their show or their new technology or whatever it is. Did you see a lot of that at AdTech and NAB? People say, well, let me show you how this technology works on my iPad, or I'll do a demo here on my iPad.
Yeah, I saw quite a bit of it. I saw Scott Bourne, who does podcasting with Alex. He did his whole presentation about Twitter. He did it off of his iPad, which was kind of fun to watch him do that using Keynote. And then I saw a lot of different booths where either giving away iPads or using them for demos. One of my sponsors was walking around MDialog, and they were showing off their new dynamic ad insertion on the iPad. The only downside that I saw was and a lot of times this happens at these bigger conventions, is that they don't have a good internet connection. When that happens, it kind of, you know, renders the iPad useless for accessing content on the web.
And of course, Alex Lindsay, who's not here today, did a fantastic led a fantastic session at Ad Tech last week on tablets. We had some folks from advertising agencies. We had Mike Bloxam, who is a researcher at Ball State University, just kind of talking about the role of advertising on tablets and just kind of the need for as advertising comes into this world, the need for it to be sort of fully interactive, to really kind of click on something and be more like, if you're reading a magazine on an iPad, you know, be able to click on something and have it be, you know, just give you a much more immersive experience and learn a lot more. Obviously can't do that with a an actual paper magazine. Speaking of apps, of course, ABC is just very, very happy with its iPad results. Disney-owned ABC is the first and so far only TV network to offer an App Store application for watching their shows free of charge. And the Wall Street Journal basically examined the success of this app after the first 10 days that it was made available. And the app has been downloaded 250,000 times, which is basically the equivalent of nearly half of the 450,000 devices sold by Apple thus far. That was in an article last week in MacLife, probably up a little bit since then. It's free streaming of some of the most popular shows that ABC offers, Desperate Housewives, Grey's Anatomy, so on, with 5 30-second ads inserted into each hour. So very similar to what you'd get if you were watching on ABC.com. This has been really additive for ABC and for the advertisers that have been part of it: Clorox, Lexus, AT&T, Heineken, Sears, Target, etc., etc. Strong early results, Tim, but are they just early results? Can something like this continue?
Well, I mean, you look at these numbers and they're great percentage-wise for how many iPads are deployed, but in terms of, you know, 205,000 downloads, that's no big deal. You know, if you were charging a $50 CPM, that's not that much money. So they're going to need to have it deployed in the millions to really make a difference and to make some money. So right now it looks like, hey, it's great. They're you know, getting penetration given the amount of iPads that are out there. But in the overall scheme of things, they're not really denting things. Although the plus side is, these are people who spend money on stuff that they don't need, like an iPad. You don't need an iPad. So these are desirable consumers, and these are the kinds of people that advertisers want. So that, you know, an advertiser isn't wasting their money, and they're going to get a bigger bang for their buck if they're going after these early adopters.
It was like when our friend Brian Brusha was on a couple of weeks ago, before the iPad officially came out, and he was saying that the subscription cost doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if people are going to buy iPads. Cameron, you're a self-described Apple fan person. You're very keen on the iPad. You want to get one. For the skeptics out there, and there still are plenty who just really believe doesn't have a lot of use, or it's a silly device, or whatever it is, what would you say to them to convince them that this isn't just a novelty?
I would say, first of all, go out to, like, you know, an Apple store or a Best Buy and actually hold one and use one. Because, you know, holding and actually using an iPad for the first time is an experience. I mean, you kind of finally understand what this thing is about. I think that, you know, if you're just looking at it on a web page or on paper, admittedly, yes, if you haven't seen one in person, it does seem a little bit odd. It's like reading off of a screen. That seems not all that great. But I mean, I think the whole selling point of the iPad is that it's just so polished and so simplistic and beautiful and easy to use. And it's really, it's targeting, you know, the people who are, you know, kind of the people who aren't, you know, the super geeks out there, the people who, you know, like for example, the Kindle is still a pretty geeky device. It's more mainstream, but compared to the iPad, it is a little bit more aimed at more tech savvy crowd, I think.
Wait, you're saying that the Kindle is aimed at a more tech savvy crowd, or the iPad?
The iPad is aimed at a more simple crowd. The Kindle seems like it's aimed more for the tech savvy crowd. Maybe that's just me, but like with the e-ink display and things like that, it just seems, you know, maybe that's just me. I always think Apple is like, you know, they're sending to, like, you know, the people who, you know, like the iPod. They made MP3 players go mainstream with the iPod, basically. And well, I think that's what they're doing with the tablets.
Hey, Cameron, you're drinking the Kool-Aid. You're drinking the Kool-Aid. That's okay.
Apple
That's
Kool-Aid.
Okay.
Delicious.
Mm. And now we've got our product place.
Apple Kool-Aid.
Indeed. Now, Zach, the numbers that we talked about, strong early results, but I just wonder how much stock there is to put in early results and early usage for anything. If you're always going to see kind of a big rush initially, and then it fades.
Okay, this is. I see your point. Big rush initially, then it fades. Meh. And I see Tim's point. Here's the way I look at it. ABC is a big company. They don't need this iPad app to make some cash. This is what they have done with their application. First off, we are talking about them on This Week in Media. Step one accomplished. The whole point, in my opinion, what they're doing here is, yes, they're generating some revenue that's going to pay their bandwidth costs for hosting all these episodes. But what ABC is doing is increasing their brand equity huge. I know people that have the iPad. I know people that watched ABC episodes online, and that made them talk about it some. The fact that they have it on their iPad now, I'm watching Lost while I'm on the exercise bike at the gym. I'm watching V. I didn't even watch V before. What they're doing is putting their name in our head. And when they do that, we're watching their shows. We're clicking on their commercials on the iPad. You know, we're making it more interactive. The whole point here is to increase awareness for their product and for their brand, in my opinion, for this application. I don't think that they have some big long-term profit model developed just yet, because it's still a relatively new device that not many companies know how to capitalize on and cash out on. They're huge. They're making shows like Lost. They're making shows like V. I've got Desperate Housewives first season right here. You know what I mean? Like, these are big products, and they're not concerned with that right now. What they're worried about is just putting their name out there some more and becoming some cool kids in the tech crowd, because the tech crowd spends a lot of money. And like Cameron said, the iPad is a very user-friendly device. My mom is getting one of these. My lady friend's mom is getting one of these. I mean, these are very slick. If you go and you can see the 100-year-old woman using this, search the video on Gizmodo and things like that. I mean, these are extremely simple devices to use, and they do exactly what you need them to do. And there's no added bulk that a computer or a laptop would bring. It's just gets things done. It's snappy. It has a very good mobile processor. And it just gets things done, and Apple or ABC just wants to be part of that hubbub. You know, there's a big, I mean, like I said, and people are saying in chat, Zud in the chat right now is talking about, you know, oh, another iPad chat. But yeah, the big news right now is this revolutionary device. This is This Week in Media, and media is being funneled through this device. We've got news publications, we've got television, we've got movies, we've got Netflix, we've got Hulu possibly coming. I mean, there's a lot of things happening here, and I just think that ABC is capitalizing.
It's important to pay attention to. I agree. It's something that it's important to pay attention to for a lot of reasons. Advertisers are paying attention to it. Media companies are paying attention to it. So it's obviously something that we need to continue to track, and clearly we will. And just, you know, one more story to that point is Macworld had a great piece kind of looking at the app potential. Obviously, the iPhone really ushered in kind of a whole new era of something that we didn't know we wanted before it even existed, and those were apps. And based on this estimates from this from a Macworld article, are that basically the top 100 paid iPad apps collectively took in about $304,000 in revenue already, and that the iPad market for apps is going to be a $1 billion market in 2 years. Tim, what do you make of this? Can we read a similar issue? Can we read anything into these numbers, or are we seeing sort of a transference of our already existing desire for apps?
Yeah, I mean, they did a great job. Apple did a great job of laying the groundwork with the iPhone and the iPod Touch, and this is just extending it. The next step will either be the desktop, and we'll be paying for desktop apps through the App Store, and then the television. The television is the holy grail. If we can get people to buy apps on their TV, you know, that's who's going to win this ball game.
Cameron, what sort of apps would you buy on the TV?
Oh, on the TV, that's interesting. Well, that does kind of bring up an interesting point, going back to like the MLB stuff we were talking about earlier. If there was an app on your TV that kind of, like Zach was saying, kind of made it, you know, work with your iPad for media viewing, not just for MLB, but for like any show. Like, imagine if you're watching any kind of sports show, being able to tap a button on your iPad and it flips around and it shows you the current scores. Or, you know, you can tap this button and find out more about, you know, the cast mm-hmm. list, or, you know, what actor that is. Or also product placement things. What if your iPad kind of popped up, hey, want to buy that shirt, or, you know, want to buy this car or whatever? That is kind of an interesting model. Plus also, you know, things like integrating it with social media, being able to tap one button and say, I'm watching this show.
And of course, we still have to keep track what's going to happen whenever Google introduces its e-reader or its tablet. I'd be really curious to see what that might look like. I'm definitely, I use a Mac. Those of you who are watching can see, though I still use a PC for finances and other things and running PowerPoint presentations, because it's really kind of challenging to get everything to work perfectly on a Mac easily. And I'm not as sold, as you can probably tell, I'm not as sold on the iPad potential. Definitely a big believer in Google and Google's technology. So I'm really curious to see what we do see, what potential comes from that. I still like my Kindle. I still like the simplicity when it comes to reading of the actual Kindle. So I don't see myself switching anytime soon. But apparently, according to a TechCrunch story that was also picked up in Jezebel, dudes who have iPhones are really attractive to chicks. Yeah, this is important research that's being done. important research out there. Surveyed phones for you, because phones for you is not biased at all. Surveyed 1,500 women and supposedly found that 54% of them were more likely to be interested in a guy if he had an iPhone. So for all of you guys who are interested in ladies and you've been having trouble maybe with your pickup lines or whatever it is, just show her your iPhone. That's all you need to do. Final story I want to touch on. A Nielsen Facebook study that said social ads perform better. This was reported in socialmedia.com and the blogs on social media. And a study that surveyed over 800,000 Facebook users. More research here, whether it's spurious or not. We'll see. But surveyed over 800,000 Facebook users and found that an increase in ad recall, brand awareness, and purchase intent, that went up when users see friends who have become fans of the brand in the ad. I don't know. I can't stand getting, become a friend of this, become a fan of this, become a blah, blah, so-and-so became a fan. I don't understand how this could be effective. But maybe I'm just being overly skeptical. So I guess the questions for you guys. Tim, effectiveness of social ads. Do you think it's sort of the whole idea of when somebody in your social circle likes something, you're more apt to like it too. I understand if it's sort of like a pure tweet, like, Tim, you tell me, here's this great technology that I should use for a prompter. Yes, but that's not an ad. That's you telling me something. Is there another layer where paid media and earned media can truly complement each other that will be beneficial both for the users and for the advertisers?
Sure. I think if you take a look at some of the top brands in social media right now, brands like Kodak or Zappos, they really understand the culture of what's going on and they understand the engagement. You know, you think about a brand like Kodak. Kodak is about making memories and they understand that, and they've really taken that charge and they brought that to social media. And so they understand that the same type of memories that you capture with Kodak products, you also capture that in social media. And their chief marketing officer really, really understands that and understands how to emotionally engage an audience within social media. And that's what it takes. You know, it's cocktail party rules. A lot of people think, oh, social media, look at me, look how great my site is, look at my podcast, look at my blog. That doesn't cut it. You can't walk into a cocktail party and start handing out business cards. And the same thing applies in social media. You have to listen first, understand the conversation that's going on in that space, and then add something to the conversation that moves the conversation forward without drawing attention to yourself. And hey, that's what these smart brands have done.
Hey, Cameron, how tapped in is your generation to social media? I know obviously you're leaning in that direction clearly because you're part of this. You're a content creator, you're a video maker, you're engaged in this already. But sort of when you fan out sort of beyond what you're doing, just in general, are they as tapped in and as interested in the things that we talk about as we are?
I think that really depends on the person. I mean, in terms of just like general social media, pretty much everyone that I've ever met, I'm friends with on Facebook. You know, I meet them one day, the next day I have a friend request. But I mean, tying into all this, I think that a lot of people kind of get that, you know, like, you know, companies are starting to kind of use these social media sites like Facebook particularly to, you know, funnel ads into. And I think that a lot of people, at least in my generation that I'm friends with on Facebook, are starting to kind of get that. And they either go one of two directions. They either go the way where they just like hide everything because they can't stand advertising, or they go the other way where they actually start using that to their advantage. You know, and I think that kind of like what you were talking about earlier, where it's like, if it's just like a straight ahead ad, it kind of starts to feel a little bit more spam like than a recommendation from a friend. But if it's done in a more personal manner, rather than just like a thing where it's like so-and-so became a fan or liked or whatever the terminology on Facebook is now, that I don't really pay as much attention to. But if someone sent, you know, posts a YouTube video or a link personally and says, I saw this, thought it was really great, check it out, I'm more inclined to watch it.
Zach, do you think that social media is going to be intrinsic to every ad campaign? I mean, with studies like this and just with the increasing use of it, is it going to be possible for advertisers and for media brands to promote anything and market anything without social media?
I think that, like Tim was saying, there's a fine line between promoting and then sort of annoying people. I think that so far we're seeing, like he said, Kodak and brands like that doing a great job of it. I think that it's going to have to be taken in consideration when they're making a new advertising campaign, because the fact of the matter is, you know, television, magazine, and print is, you know, are huge markets, but the internet is slowly rising. You know, well, the internet's big, and people may not necessarily have the numbers to back it up like something more broad like television does, but they're more interactive. We'll say clicks, they're more interactive, so I think you can value them differently. So I feel like companies that aren't embracing social media, and which I completely hate that phrase, but if companies aren't embracing social media, then I think that unless they're giant, they probably are making a bad decision. But something like ABC, I feel like they didn't have to make that iPad app, but it's just another thing that they did that was a good move.
They did that just because they love you so much. They did it because they're wonderful and they wanted to make you happy.
I know. ABC and I are tight, right, Daisy?
You know, there once was a day when apparently it was really prestigious to be a journalist. And I want to thank Daniel Drake for reminding me of what that day was like. I shared this wonderful website. I think it's called the Crap Archivist. And there was a fantastic book that came out in 1965 called Your Career in Journalism. And you'll find wonderful jewels in this book. Like, if you're a college graduate in journalism, you may land a job before you even leave campus. Another one, the story that a reporter worried and sweated over will be read by thousands and perhaps millions of people who will be informed, enlightened, or amused. He has prestige and influence that most persons can never hope to attain. And on that note, we're going to wrap things up for This Week in Media with the prestige and influence that we don't really have, but we're very glad that you listen. Let's go around the horn. Everyone can tell our listeners where they can be found. Tim, where would you like people to find you?
You can find me on my website, onetimstreet.com, and listen to my new podcast for small business owners. It's SMBiz, SMBIZZ on iTunes.
Very nice. Cameron, where do you want people to find you?
On the Harwood Podcast Network website, which is www.harwoodpodcast.com. That's HARWOOD podcast.com.
And since you're new to the show, give us a quick sampling of some of the shows and podcasts that you produce.
Oh, wow. Wide range. I mean, we have everything from, we have quite a few cooking shows. Those are really popular. One of the ones that a lot of people might be interested in, The Cookie Jar. Pretty self-explanatory. Yeah, that's a good show. You get hungry after watching it.
All right, check out The Cookie Jar. Zach, where do you want people to find you?
You can find me at twitter.com/ZachLouie. I have a weird name, ZACKLUYE, Colleen, lower third. And from there, you can click through to my website, ZachLouie.com. And I'm always elbows deep in tea at Adagio.com. And we're opening a new store in May in Chicago.
All right, don't forget, you can friend us up, fan us up. I'm not even sure what it is, but we have a Facebook page, the Twim Facebook page. You can check us out there. I always love hearing from listeners, love getting your story ideas. Guys, this is so vital to the show because our listeners are so tapped into what's going on. So as always, please do not hesitate to email me, daisywhitney@gmail.com. On Twitter, I'm Daisy Whitney. You can link me up story ideas. A big thanks, as always, to Jason Perrier in Canada, who helps us out and uncovers a lot of stories for us, and to our producers, Suzanne and John. Without them, I would be even crazier. So, and on that note, this mess you've been listening to is This Week in Media. We are over and out.